Welcome to the Business of Tech Lounge, the live version of the Business of Tech podcast. It's Wednesday, April 24th, 2024, and I'm your host, Dave Sobel. Today on the show, the nuclear threat to cybersecurity, discussing influencers and how to reach potential customers, a counterpoint to unlimited PTO with Ray Orsini of OIT VoIP, and the escalation of Broadcom's woes. Plus, your questions and comments. I want to thank Sales Builder, our Patreon sponsor, whose support makes this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. And want to get your logo right here? Vendors, you can do so with our Vendor Patreon program. It's a simple monthly subscription, and visit patreon.com/MSPradio to sign up. I can't do this show without support, and thanks again to Sales Builder for theirs. Now, I do take questions and comments throughout the show, so make sure to put them in the chat. I have a dedicated question section in the show with listener-submitted questions, but we'll throw chat comments up on screen anytime. But first, our top story. It seems the escalation of the Broadcom acquisition of VMware continues. Hock Tan, the CEO for Broadcom, put out a blog post to clarify the position of the organization. Their goal? To help customers in their digital transformation. He outlined how the go-to-market strategy for VMware Cloud Foundation has been simplified and made more affordable. A focus on R&D and a development of the seamless private cloud experience competitive with the public cloud. Its focus is on delivering consistent customer experiences, including standardizing pricing and technology stack for cloud providers. Finally, VMware will complete its transition to a subscription model. Now, Broadcom's attempts to address concerns over VMware subscription changes have not been particularly successful, leading to further backlash from industry stakeholders. The Cloud Infrastructure Providers in Europe, or CISPE, criticized Broadcom's subscription-based pricing model as anti-cloud and raised issues with unfair licensing practices. Despite Broadcom's commitment to research and development and price reductions, CISPE argues that the new terms restrict choice and prompt vendor lock-in. Other industry professionals also have expressed criticism, citing concerns about stifled innovation and harm to cloud competition. CISPE also highlighted Broadcom's limitations in offering free access to security patches and criticized the company's tone and claims of lowered prices. Now, Broadcom's changes to VMware subscription pricing model has been met with other criticisms as well, leading many customers to consider alternative platforms. In response, Broadcom is offering ongoing security patches for customers who stick with their perpetual licenses. However, many VMware customers are already evaluating other technologies and may switch soon. Here's one comment in the discussion. Quote, VMware is a zombie product. Nobody with any brains is going to hold on longer than they have to. That's funny because customers are tired of being raked over the coals with the ridiculous price increases with little of value being offered in return. And there are some winners in all this, other companies. According to Scale Computing CEO Jeff Reddy, Broadcom's price hikes and cut partner snubs have fueled Scale Computing's record growth. As VMware has raised prices and focused on larger customers after being acquired by Broadcom, Scale Computing has emerged as an alternative for VMware customers. Reddy highlighted the support and value that Scale Computing provides compared to its competitors. The coverage also mentions the concern of VMware customers about diminished support and innovation under Broadcom, as well as the significantly higher bills they have received. Scale Computing is experiencing strong growth and is on track to break 50% growth this year. So, why do we care? This all feels like a slow motion train wreck. Now, what I want to focus on is the opportunities this creates. Organizations like Scale are taking advantage. So, the question you want to ask yourself is, what can you do to take advantage here? If you're already embedded very deeply in the VMware ecosystem, this is an opportunity to look at changing that. And you might consider moving beyond just their strategy to a multi-vendor strategy as well. You also might decide to break this up and move some more into the cloud or break it up into SaaS applications instead. Opportunity is what we're looking for in these kinds of disruptions. And to be fair, Broadcom brought it on themselves. Note the timeline. It didn't happen immediately upon acquisition. It's happening a few months later. This is indicative of what we see in many of these acquisitions. And thus, note that you're looking for those changes post-acquisition. Now, we're going to continue to track this one and see if anything more comes of it. Now, if you've got a question or a comment, put it in the chat if you're watching live. So one of the benefits of this format is I'm going to have some fun and do different things. You may recently remember I had Peter Kujau on the show, and we focused on new compensation data from service leadership in my interview with him. We talked about unlimited PTO, and Peter noted it's least likely in best-in-class organizations, and that often companies with unlimited PTO result in employees taking less PTO. Now, Ray Orsini, CEO of OIT VoIP, reached out to offer a counterpoint, and he came armed with data after his organization embraced unlimited PTO. So I asked him about it. So Ray, tell me about the data you considered that drove you to the decision to implement unlimited PTO.
So it's actually not that complicated. I go through the same struggles as a small business every other owner does, which is, how can I improve my benefits so I can retain a better caliber of employee for a longer term? There's only really two ways to do that. One, throw a lot of salary at it, or two, throw a lot of benefits. And if you're funded, do both. Unfortunately, we're not funded. We're self-funded. So we do pay good salaries, but we're always looking for benefits. And since we've already done the 401k and we've already done the insurance and all the other stuff, we were looking at some of the ones that nobody else is offering. So unlimited PTO has actually been on the table for years. I'm sorry. The last iteration of this we looked at 11 months ago, and that was based on, and we looked at the data saying, what are the time off requests? What are getting approved? What's getting denied? I did look at what we're paying out in the case of an exit, because that's always one of the chief concerns, right? Businesses do this so they don't have to pay out vacation when an employee exits. So we did look at that, and I'll give you the numbers on that. We also looked at how many time off requests were being denied and the average amount of time off just requested per employee. And then I did balance that against how many disciplinary issues we were having for employees. And I wanted to start creating the case for less time off creates burnout, creates underperformance, and creates disciplinary issues. I have not done the corollary now that we're doing unlimited PTO, so I will have to get back to you on that another time. But the numbers were pretty simple. It came out to, let me pull up the stats here. It came out to, we were looking at, so we had several types of time off requests. We had bereavement leave, floating time off, and I'll give you the numbers. Bereavement leave, 3 days minimum, although we extended it multiple times for multiple people, depending on the case. Never said no to that. Floating time off, we would give, this was a throwback from my police department days, we would give 2 days of time off for if you had a holiday you celebrated that I don't celebrate, or something along those lines, just free time off. We had traditional PTO, where we would give paid time off for birthdays, we would give a bonus for anniversaries or performance. That was one of the managerial tools we had to give approval. And then sick leave, obviously, we would give sick leave 8 hours a month. I'll listen to all the Europeans laugh at me later. And then vacation between 2 and 8 weeks. It started at 2 weeks for every new employee, and then added a week every extra year you worked here, and you could always stack up to double of whatever you had. So if you had 2 weeks, you stacked to four, which will go to the vacation question. Now, of that, in PTO hours given, and this was the real problem for me, we were providing 672 hours of PTO floating time off. Only 378 hours was actually used, right? So a little over half. Of traditional PTO, we gave 84 hours, and then they took 545.05 hours of unpaid time off. That was the red flag for me. That are people that are choosing, I can choose my personal life versus work, and I'm going to be at a deficit work-wise, have less money to pay my bills or do whatever recreational things I want to do because my personal time is more important to me. That is 545 hours of that choice, which is a problem to me. Then you had sick leave. We had granted 2,016 hours of sick leave. We actually used 883.42 hours. So that doesn't even come at half. That comes at, 40%? And then the big one, the painful one that kills me. This is the one you see in the news all the time. You've reported on yourself. Vacation, 6,400 hours, actually used 1,323 hours, 0.5. That is a sixth. That is insane to me. When you have 18% utilization on vacation, that is, and this is not because people are exiting and take money. We have very, we traditionally have very low turnover as far as employee wise, but this doesn't make sense to me when you have employees choosing to take 1/6 of their vacation. And now we go approved versus denied, because then the question becomes, were they getting their time off request denied? And this is all under the period of 15 years of regular PTO. The data I'm using here is 12 months prior to our unlimited PTO usage. So it is the most recent with our current staff. And about 10% of our staff is new from when we first started. So PTO requests. We had traditional PTO requests, 332 requests, and 11 were denied. So 332 approved, 11 denied under traditional PTO. That is over a 12-month period. Okay. Over a 4-month period that we've had unlimited PTO, same number of staff, 340 requests of time off that were approved in the 4 months, not the 12 months. 9 were denied. So, because like anything else, unlimited PTO still has to go to the employee, the manager, and ask the questions of, do we have staffing, and, you know, is it appropriate and all that. As a company, we push down from the top, give PTO, be liberal with it. I approve more than you deny. If it's getting denied, HR already has a series of questions they will validate against to make sure it's not undue. That has to be done from the top down. You've seen all these people before that talk about unlimited PTO. And then we just had this. This is a direct quote from my director of marketing. She just came from another company. I won't say who. But as she gave her notice, they said, you know, one of the things is we have unlimited PTO. We don't advertise it. We don't tell anybody, but you can ask for whatever you want. We'll always approve it. You know how asinine that is? You know how ridiculous that is? Yeah, you can call for 911, but we're not going to tell you the number unless you express an interest. Mind-boggling to me. And that's the real catch, right? The employees come in and they go into these companies where they see unlimited PTO on the job posting, and then they get the job accepted and they're excited about it, but they never ask the qualifying questions. Do you have a policy as far as how you approve time off? What is management's stance on personal lives? One of the things Dean Trumpolis used to mention when he worked here was that we treat the employee like a whole person. Your job is to serve your personal life. That has to be a management directive. That has to be, the company has to understand this, right? You can do all the, you can have all the things that are important to you that you want, but if I don't have those same interests and those same priorities, you're never going to get the benefit of it. If I don't tell my leaders and my managers, make sure we're on the same page, give time off, then it's always going to be seen as what we've seen in the market so far.
So since adopting it, what have you seen change in terms of those numbers to the new metrics?
So we're doing 4 times the number of requests over the same time period. We have vacation taken because we do still categorize the time off. So traditional PTO, they took 3,400 hours of PTO under traditional vacation. Unlimited PTO, 4,196. We're seeing time usage increase, which is the design. To any business owners probably hearing, especially small business owner, they're terrified, right? They're like, oh my gosh, you're using all this time. I build it into the budget. My cost for carrying the company is X amount of labor. Whether they're here or not, I need to be able to do the job. Starting from the top down, I look at it and I say, I don't need to be here. How do I build my job to not be here? I extend that through the rest of the company so that they can have the freedom to take time off because somebody else can cover. Now, how does that work? How does that work without breaking me financially? That works very easily. you don't overburden your employee, right? You should be doing 75, 80% of employee burden to have a successful employee. Everything else is just gravy. You have to have multiple people. Nothing can be that only, no job can only be done by a single person. That doesn't work. And I require my managers to know how to do their employees' jobs too. So anybody can step in, anybody can help, myself included. So nobody feels the weight of the world on their shoulders. Add to that, managers are told, you know, plan things out. Don't do things last minute, whether it's frontline employees, whether it's large project teams or whatever, plan things out. That gives us freedom to manage. And then finally, our backup plans give us the ability to the confidence to be able to assign that time off. Well, what do the numbers look like? The numbers look like we have, now I don't have the performance numbers yet. Unfortunately, that took a little longer to compile, so I wasn't able to do them. But I will tell you that anecdotally, we are seeing better CSAT reviews. We've had CSAT going since last April. Unlimited PTO was enacted last August, so we had 4 months of CSAT. And you can say it's not correlation. I will argue an employee that has a more free life, that they can enjoy their personal things and come to work and just work and just move on with their life, like it's not their entire all-consuming job, are going to perform better, and the clients are going to see that. And with the way our CSAT customer satisfaction surveys were going, I'm satisfied with the results. Also, we've had our employee surveys we do annually. We've had 2 employee surveys during these time periods. So thankfully, I compare one versus another. An unlimited PTO was asked, and we have 100% of the employees say they enjoy the unlimited PTO. Didn't expect otherwise, but it's a nice stat to have. You can never get 100% of your, and for a baseline, we're 42 employees that are through US, Canada, Philippines, I'm missing one, Brazil. Our employees are all over. So, and this doesn't take into account, we still have the regular time off, holidays and stuff like that too. All of that goes into it, but we're seeing higher performing employees, and we're seeing employees that are willing to do extra. That's, and again, this is anecdotal. It's hard to quantify, but when we ask for something, when we ask for overtime, or because it's always an ask, not a requirement, when we ask for somebody to pitch in on a project, or we ask for somebody to do a little bit extra, they're happy to, because they're not getting burnt out. And not to say we don't have employees that have high workloads and get, you know, frustrated and tired. We all do. And we make accounts. We do that too. And then from a financial perspective, this is going to be dumb, but you're going to appreciate this. So remember I said traditional PTO, 332 requests over the time period, 332 requests at 3 minutes per. The reason 3 minutes, they have to check that the employee has the balances available, and then they have to approve it. By not having that check, it's just a limited PTO. It's just, was it approved by the manager or not? We shaved that down to 2 minutes. As ridiculous as it sounds, yes, we shaved 30% off the 3 minutes it was taking. But from a numbers guy, 3 minutes times 300, that's a lot of time. That's 900 minutes I can do something else with. Or 300 requests, that's 900 minutes I can do something else with. You know what I mean? Like, That is valuable time. If I said I could give back 900 minutes and reduce that from my HR salary, right? Because an HR salary is not small. If I could reduce that and apply it to something else more productive, any efficiency expert would call that a win. And I was able to do that by doing the same thing we were already doing, just giving time off.
Right. This is awesome. Thanks for the insights. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thank you.
So we have to ask, why do we care? Now, I went long on this because Ray brought data. Anybody coming to this show and brings that kind of data and that kind of depth, I wanted to make sure that we share it. What really my takeaway for me is there's not one way to run a business. That's what's struggling with. What Ray describes is finding that competitive advantage by heading in a different direction. It's possible that you could listen to the best in class data coming out of service leadership and decide that the only way to do it is perform exactly the same way that the best in class are doing. In that case, most best in class are not executing an unlimited PTO strategy. But what Ray did was look at the numbers and say, for his business, he could take that insight and say, I can differentiate and position myself in the market differently by doing something different from the best in class and achieve better results. And one of the things that I want to make sure to continue to do to push back on my show and the way we do analysis of this data is to not fall into the trap of thinking that there is only one single way to execute. There's not. There's multiple ways to get to the results we're looking for. And as long as you're doing it in a way that's thoughtful and data-driven, you're going to be able to measure that success over time. Now, remember, we do take questions, and I'm watching that chat. If you've got something you want to chime in with, throw it in the chat or ask a question, and I will take the questions during our question section. Now, over on the weekend, this past weekend, I released an interview with Rodrigo Loureiro. He's the CEO of the Cyber Connective Corporation. Now, let's remind you a bit of that conversation. I'm going to pivot a little bit here. You've termed AI as a nuclear threat to cybersecurity. Now, I'm impressed. That's a big, bold statement. Let's observe that nuclear weapons wipe out all life on Earth. So tell me more about why you think that this is, that AI is a nuclear threat for cybersecurity.
Nuclear threat is a nuclear threat for cybersecurity because of the massive capabilities of the adversaries, all attackers, to be able to have an army of, you know, and whether we call those the AI today as conscious or not, that's really besides the point. But it's tireless bots that can execute and penetrate an organization. So imagine this. Imagine, for example, the threat that is represented by what we call the script kiddies, right? You know, it's the curious young people around the world with armed nothing more than a few scripts that penetrate into your organizations, and they have a good success rate at doing that. Now imagine multiply that by millions, because to create an AI bot, you know, there you don't need anything else than a small computer. And imagine that those bots are working 24/7, constantly attacking organizations. And then you multiply that by the millions of scripty kids that are out there. So for me, I termed it that way, because for me, it arms those hundreds of thousands or millions of cyber attackers that don't have a lot of skills, and arms them with the skills and the power and the knowledge to cause serious damage. And then you couple that with what I talked at the beginning, that most organizations lack basic hygiene in terms of cybersecurity. And that's why I see it as a very serious threat to the stability of our digital infrastructure.
Now, I want to understand the difference between current and what you're thinking about, because while I appreciate the threat of script kiddies, I would push back and say, like, look, ransomware is run by mafia gangs. Like, these are well-run corporate entities that just happen to implement illegal practices rather than legal ones. I mean, I don't think of script kiddies attacking businesses. I think of mafia-style businesses that have multi-tier administration, have automated their processes to the level of already implementing those bots, have, you know, affiliate programs where they can sell it out and have armed those non-technical people already. What's the difference you think AI is going to bring to the landscape that makes it that much more threat?
Well, AI will be able to, you know, the big promise of AI when organizations look at it is increase in productivity, increase of efficiency. Now, think about that and apply it to those nation states and to those mafias and to those gangs that are organized as cybercrime. It is going to impact and increase their effectiveness and increase their productivity, which in my book is a terrible thing, because they're already very effective and very productive.
So we have to ask, why do we care? I keep thinking about automation in these scenarios. What Rodrigo's focused on is less the AI and more what AI will do for automation in general. think thematically this fits in with all of the conversations that I've been focused on around artificial intelligence and how it's going to make a difference in our businesses. It's not about automating away to the level that you have no interaction. It's about making individual humans much more productive in the way that they go to market and the way that they do their jobs. For cybersecurity, it allows the threat actors, or criminals, because we want to use the right words, to be much more scalable, deliver much more from a single individual beyond what they're able to do on their own. And I think thematically, that's what we're looking at and why he talks about it as such a potential threat. And I think what we're looking for is more ways for our organizations both to become more automated, yet at the same time, make sure that that automation is amplifying people. And any organization that's able to do that are the ones that are going to be the most successful. Now, we are taking questions, and you can still submit anytime in the chat window. Or submit for next week if you're watching the recording, sending to question@mspradio.com. Remember, bring your questions live, and you'll get a live response. This is my most fun portion of the show. I do really enjoy taking questions as it gives you a chance to get involved with the show. So let's take our first submitted question.
How do you evaluate a vendor's performance? What do you consider when examining a vendor? Any advice is welcome.
I get asked about vendors on a regular basis. And so how do I evaluate a vendor? How I evaluate a vendor is probably a little different than anybody who's a managed services provider or IT services provider. For me, I get the role of being an analyst and saying, I want to understand what their strategy in the market is, what growth mode they're in, and what value they're delivering. Where you overlap as an MSP is you're going to probably start with that last one. What value are they delivering to me? How are they aligned with me in the market? And how can we deliver solutions together through the execution of that strategy? Oftentimes I get asked about this, particularly when a vendor has a moment, whether they've been acquired, whether they go public, they get a funding round, where there's a new leadership change. Those are the moments where strategy might change more dramatically, or it's a bellwether for that strategy will happen sometime soon. But for me, the way that I'm evaluating vendors is how do I think they're building additional value in the market? And so for you, the IT services provider or managed services provider, I want you to be evaluating that same bit in alignment with your own business. If you got a question, throw it in the chat. We do have time for a little bit more, and I do love taking them. If you're watching the recording, know that you can send it in at question@mspradio.com, and I'll answer it next week. Now, I want to give you a highlight to an upcoming interview this weekend, an interview with Joe Vizzani. He's the CEO at Lunar Crush. Let's hear a bit of that interview, because my interest in Lunar Crush is their ability to listen online and bring back actionable insights for brands. A little bit about the way way influencers work for these technology companies that are going to consider like, hey, we need to go to market and reach potential customers, but also our customers are learning things from influencers. Talk to me about how, like, help them understand how this economy works.
So influencers start in all sorts of different ways, and these platforms are all different in the way that they create content. You know, you have a lot of, I think, hobbyists that start and they kind of think to themselves, you know, can I do this? Can I create some sort of audience on here? And it, you know, I think the best people have started with just an idea. Hey, I'm just going to start putting myself out there a little bit, and I'm potentially a subject matter expert on a specific topic that maybe has a broad use case, or maybe it has a niche, right? Like you might be, you know, the most influential person on ice baths and cold plunges, right? Or you might be on just broad-based AI and you have some great opinions. And so these things start in all sorts of different ways. There's also some of these influencers start anonymously, right? There's someone that potentially is working at a business and they can't put their face and name out there the way that you or I can, but they want to get their ideas out into the world. And you know, even in our industry in Web3, you know, there's a lot of influencers and creators that get hired and you don't know who they are, right? But you do know that they have a great reputation online. And then how do you utilize a partnership there to potentially get your brand out there with these people? And so we've created some tools at Lunar Crush that we're launching that help this kind of micro influencer economy work, where if you're a brand, you know, you're used to hiring a creator and, you know, we have a lot of budget leak, as we say, right? You're kind of like, it's the same thing as having a billboard, right? You don't necessarily know. It's more of an awareness play, where we're trying to shift that into more of a performance play, right? Where it's, I know exactly how many impressions I'm getting from this budget from every influencer that's out there. And as the transparency and the data starts to happen, we're now able to correctly get those people the right amount of money for the campaigns that they're doing. And so, you know, as you look at social media data, there's a lot of different use cases here for understanding the creator economy.
So a reminder for my listeners, my Patreon supporters already have this video, and you can get all my interview content early as a supporter. Visit patreon.com/MSPradio to find out more. Now, we do have a question that's thrown in there from the chat, and so I want to make sure to take that now. I was asked, when is part two coming out for the starting a managed services provider video? Now, interestingly, I will point out I have actually a couple of videos on my channel already about that. If you haven't seen them, you may want to take on the, are you starting an IT services business or don't start an MSP, which are two follow-on videos from there as well. I'll give you a preview. I am working on a 2024 version of this video, and some of my thinking is around the idea of being much more of a sales engine for engaging your customers. The idea, you'll go out into the market, identify problems, and then leverage other partners to sell more. In particular, I'm very keen on what's going on with distribution. And if you haven't watched it already, I would watch my video from the end of the year around the future of distribution. It's an interview that it's multiple interviews. I did all in the same video, and that'll give you a preview of some of the way that I'm thinking. And I want to thank you, Abdullah, for that question. I will continue to take questions in the show. Now, I want to thank Sales Builder, our Patreon sponsor, whose support makes this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. And vendors, you too can get your name mentioned on the live show. It's a simple monthly subscription. Visit patreon.com/MSPradio for more. And listeners, you too can support the show. Like, share, and follow on your favorite platforms. It makes a huge difference to the show when you follow us and share it with your colleagues. And if you want to support directly, you can do so with our Give What You Want model. You set what you think the content is worth and contribute directly to the success of the show. And if you have a question or are listening to the recording, send it in at question@MSPradio.com. Next week, this live show is on Wednesday, and catch us live on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Thanks for joining me for the Business of Tech Lounge, and I will see you next time.